Committee on Business and Labor, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2753.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we've heard we had a work session on House Bill 2753 on March 27th. This is a bill from the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association, which authorizes changes in fees that a pawnbroker may collect for certain items, and also permits local governments that regulate pawnbrokers to impose a maximum fee for each pledge loan that is made. During the work session, Paul Romaine from the Pawnbrokers Association outlined the Dash 5 amendment, which is in front of you. The amendment clarifies the intent of the bill, restores the fee that can be charged to firearms required to be registered under federal law and the fee for a lost, stolen, or destroyed pawn ticket or memorandum, and modifies the criteria for when a notice must be mailed either via regular mail or by certified mail. And the amendment also clarifies that local government can impose and collect a fee of no more than $1 per pledge loan made in a calendar year.
That's Dash 5.
Yes, that's Dash 5. And you have in front of you, committee members, a fiscal statement. There is no impact to the general fund, but the LFO wanted to point out that there is a minimal indeterminate fiscal impact on local government. The city of Eugene is the only city that currently imposes a pawnbroker fee. So they just wanted to point that out in the analysis.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 5s into House Bill 2753.
Representative Cameron moves Dash 5 amendment into House Bill 2753. Is there any discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reference to Section 7, where the cities and counties may not impose a fee of not more than $1, the way I read this, and the way my understanding is that fee is specifically for the purpose of administering or using a database system, essentially. So they could actually impose a fee, another fee that's not for that purpose. Is that correct?
That's a fine question. I don't have
that is a fine question, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, Paul Romaine is not here today to answer that question, but... you are correct, though, in that the fee in the amendment, yes, would establish the, you know, for the maintenance of the database and enforcement system of it. And then the dollar is a maximum cap. It's not a flat fee of a dollar. It's just whatever the city chooses to charge, up to $1.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up?
Yes, sir.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that dollar cap is in fact... specifically for that database system, so the cities or counties are not regulated for another type of fee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, yes. I mean, looking at the Dash 5 amendment, lines 17 through 18, it clearly states it's for the purpose of administering using a system, including an electronic database, to pledge track pledged articles.
And I don't see anything saying they're prohibited from anything else.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just trying to clarify that dollar limit was exclusively
right.
For the database system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't read it that way, and I hope you're satisfied with that, because we want to move this bill today, if at all possible. Any further questions or discussions on this motion to amend the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I just wanted to echo Representative Holvey's concerns, and I read it the way you do. And so
all right,
I just wanted that on the record.
I appreciate that. Any further questions or discussions or any opposition to the motion? All right, then so moved. Representative?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2753 as amended to the House floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2753 to the floor as amended to pass recommendation. Are there any questions, comments, or discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? All right, well then, so moved. Does this merit the consent calendar or not?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make sure that's on the record on the floor, too, in relationship to that fee.
Well, would anyone like to carry the bill? Volunteer to carry the bill. Representative Witt?
Carry the bill.
Thank you very much. Well, I want to close the work session, House Bill 2753, and open work session, House Bill 2037.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2037 was first heard on March the 9th. The measure requires the Department of Administrative Services and local contracting agencies to maintain records concerning types of public contracts and to submit reports concerning such information within these contracts to the governor and the legislature.
Okay. A motion.
And I should clarify to the audience, we're moving this to the Rules Committee. So.
Forgive me. These next two we are moving to the Rules Committee. And if we want, these are the accountability, transparency, and analysis for expenditures by governments, bills. And we met with a whole bunch of nice people about this. And on the accountability, transparency part, my intention, my goal, and there's a parallel process going on in rules right now, is what I would like to see come out of this session is ODOT and DAT, Oregon Department of Transportation, Department of Administrative Services, and Department of Human Services, and I met after the big meeting, put together some big website where taxpayers, concerned citizens, and policy and budget makers will have access to a large amount of information to help them guide them through these very important processes and decisions. And then on the analysis part, I'm not sure exactly what Representative Robin has in mind. I'm of the belief that a lot of this already happens. I believe we do need to shed a little more light on it. And I also believe that over the last decade or two, people have made some bad decisions, largely based on my opinion on philosophy rather than good budget making or good sound community policy. That's my opinion. And I think we can get from here, but these bills are so large in scope, and especially due to this environment, economic climate, we simply don't have the money to do what this language says. I'm just being painfully honest. Now, that being said, I do appreciate and agree with the intent. I agree with and I intend to follow up on getting from here to there, but we're not going to do it all in one fell swoop, and that's all there is to it, because one, we don't have the money, and two, we're just not prepared. This is a long, drawn-out conversation. It's going to continue for a long time, but I believe we can get from here to there. That's what's going on here, and Representative Roland is going to continue the process in the Rules Committee. Is there anyone? I'm going to open a work session. Can I open a work session on both of them or just one?
Just one at a time.
Okay. Any other conversation or comments or questions about what's going on here with these two bills? Representative Canterbury.
Mr. Chairman, I guess, you know, I don't think this bill's ready for prime time, and I appreciate the effort to do that. Usually I think it's good to support procedural motions. I think this is probably a procedural motion, but I have concerns about the scope and nature of this bill, so I probably would just as soon see it stay here and go away.
I can appreciate that, Representative. I am confident that Representative Roland will keep us all informed and involved in any decisions that are made. I think a lot of people share, myself included, share your concerns. Once again, vote your heart. It is strictly procedural. There will be one bill, and I believe, as far as I know now, there will be one bill to move these concepts forward, and that will be coming out of the Rules Committee, whatever that bill might be. Representative Esquivel.
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, I will vote for a procedural moving of this to Rules, but I will probably be a no if this particular bill came out on the floor.
Well, Representative, if the language in this bill came out, we don't have the money. So I don't want more to say, whether we're yes or
no. I think we're in a work session, so I'm going to move House Bill 2037 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2037 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there any questions, discussion? Is there any objections to the motion?
I think I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll object.
That's fine. Any other objections? Well, with Representative Kenrod's objections, and I appreciate where he's coming from, so moved. I'm going to close the work session of House Bill 2037, open work session of House Bill 2867. Everything I just said over again, Any other questions, comments, concerns, discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2867 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2867 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just I think I've already expressed my opinion.
That's fair, Representative. Any other objection other than Representative Mayor?
No objection, just...
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd just like to go on record and just say that given the tough economic times, I think people are looking and struggling to find the transparency in the process. We're going to be hearing a lot of things about there's not enough money, there's no money to do this, no money to do that. When we're doing that and we're awarding contracts to contractors and we're going through public bids, I think people have a right to know where that money's being spent and how it's being spent. So I'm glad to hear the process is going through, and I know you're keeping everybody posted, but I certainly hope that we do come out of something that has, you know, that transparency element to it, despite the lack of budget. So, and I trust Representative Roblin will work on that.
I share those concerns. I agree with you. And I want to just say, without recommendation, I am not taking these votes, meaning that these concepts are not to be recommended. This is just a neutral procedural motion sending these concepts to the rules. I do not think it shines any negative or positive light on the motion, on the relating clause, on the bills, on the concept, or on the good people that brought these bills to us. I want to make that very clear. This is just a neutral procedural act. And no way, shape, or form do I think it holds me or anyone on this committee to any vote that may be held in the future or any position we're taking right now on these concepts. I want to make that very clear. It's a procedural vote, procedural motion, procedural... pardon me? Anyway, thank you for that input, Representative. Any other discussions? Any other objections? Representative Holby, where'd he go? Representative Holby, it's same thing all over again. Do you have any discussion, objection, concerns?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with Representative Kenemer's objection, so moved. Now, we are waiting on this, right?
Yes, we are waiting for the next two. Yes, we have to wait.
I'm going to take a short, a 30-second recess. Maybe a 90-second. Going to open a work session on House Bill 2704.
Actually, Chair, Mr. Chair, we can do a public hearing.
Forgive me. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2704.
We haven't heard the bill yet. We have to do a public hearing first, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2704 eliminates the offset for workers' compensation benefits in calculating the disability retirement allowance payable to either a Tier 2 member of a public employee's retirement system or a member of the Oregon Public Service retirement plan. There is an operative date on the measure of January 1st, 2010, and there's an emergency clause effective upon passage. And members, in front of you today is also a background brief from PERS that gives you some more detailed information behind the measure.
All right. I have Bob Livingston and Brian DeLashman. Once again, Mr. Livingston, it's a fine day for Oregon. We're having the good governor has generously agreed to have a signing ceremony for the House bill that makes certain cancers presumption related to the work of firefighters who so courageously and generously provide their service to this community, keeping us safe and healthy. And I just wanted to make that comment, especially to you, sir, and to my good friend over here, Representative Matthews, and all the rest of the firefighter, Kelly Bach, all the other firefighters that are so do the great work they do in this state. And I just want to thank you for that, and I look forward to this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the nice sentiments on behalf of the firefighters. For the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And today I also represent a larger group known as the PERS Coalition. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you today regarding a fairly straightforward bill, but always gets a little complex when you're dealing with Oregon's public employees' retirement system. House Bill 2704 is a bill that will improve the fairness to those firefighters, police officers, public health nurses, and others who suffer a severe injury while performing their duties and are eligible for a duty disability under the public employees' retirement system. Under current law, PERS Tier 2 members and members of OFSERP who experience a duty-related disability have their benefits offset by benefits received through Oregon's workers' compensation system. Because of this offset, a PERS member, like a firefighter or police officer who is severely injured in the line of duty, actually receives a lesser PERS benefit than those same public safety officers who are eligible for a non-duty-related disability benefit. In other words, a non-duty disability is worth more than a duty-related disability due to the offset imposed under current law. To illustrate the inequity in current law for Tier 2 and OFSERP members who suffer a duty-related disability, here is an example of what occurs to members' monthly benefit when the offset is applied to their disability. And, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to go over the maths really quick, and, you know, I guess minus points for me to show your work to the teacher in the sixth grade math class. But basically, if you follow this through, we're making some assumptions that this would be a general service employee who is at the age of 45, assumptions that their final average monthly salary would be $3,000 a year. And then what you do is for Tier 1, you would take 0.0167 times the number of years of service times the final average salary, and then also assume that that individual would be eligible for retirement at age 58, and that's where you come up with the 1152.30. Same thing for Tier 2, other than their retirement age is a little bit different. It's age 60, but it would be the same final average salary calculation. OPSERP, again, a little bit different system. It's simply 45% of the member's last full month salary. The point here, though, however, is that assuming that this is an illustration, the math could be a little bit different. We're going to assume, on average, if that person had a full disability, they would receive $2,000 from workers' comp. But what does occur for a Tier 2 and Tier, or I say Tier 3, but it's really OPSERP, is what really happens is because of the offset, if you look down at the bottom of the rectangle there, that's the maximum amount that they could receive from PERS due to the offset. So as a Tier 2 person, you'd receive $967 from PERS, and for OPSERP, you'd receive $250. So clearly, this illustration shows the inequity in benefits paid out based on current law that requires PERS to offset benefits to Tier 2 and OPSERP members. Fortunately, House Bill 2704 can correct this inequity without doing the following. So none of this will happen upon passage of this piece of legislation. One, it will not create a fiscal. It will not increase employer rates. And passage of House Bill 2704 does nothing to change the requirements in statute to become eligible for a pension due to a disability. So in other words, the strict requirements that are still on the books regarding how PERS would vet a disability when somebody files a claim for that, we're not changing that. We're simply eliminating the offset. So in closing, Mr. Chair, passage of House Bill 2704 will correct the wrong in current statutes that really serves no purpose other than punishing hardworking Oregons who suffer a disability in the line of duty. Please recognize the important work many Oregonians do and the sacrifice they make to their communities by supporting House Bill 2704 and moving it to the House floor. And Mr. Chair, if I may give my colleague, Mr. Gleshman, an opportunity, and be happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you.
For the record, Brian DeLashman, I'm here representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association, commonly called State Troopers, the Oregon Council of Police Associations, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, and the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers. I'll be very brief what he said. Thank you.
I love that testimony. Any questions of these fine gentlemen? Okay, guys.
Well, excuse me.
Representative Thatcher, please.
I'm looking at the language that's being eliminated, and I'm trying to marry this up here. What it says is notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter for the purpose of calculating a monthly disability. Basically, they don't want the sum of what you're getting from workers' comp and PERS, whatever benefit, to exceed the monthly salary at the time of your injury. Am I understanding that correctly?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair,
quite all right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, what it would do is, if I understand your question correctly, is it recognizes that when there's a duty-related disability, you're going to have a workers' compensation benefit that's there. You're also eligible for a pension disability. All this bill does is recognizes that those benefits are already recognized and paid for, through the normal course of actions, and it simply separates the two out and doesn't penalize a Tier 2 and an OPSERP member, and it treats them just like a Tier 1 member. Does that answer your question?
Well, I guess no. Well, I understand what you're saying, but my question was, what we're getting rid of is when you add the two benefits together, it may exceed the monthly amount. Oh, let's see, what is it? Exceed the member's monthly salary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, that's correct. Because it's a duty-related disability, they would be eligible for the workers' compensation benefit.
Follow-up, Representative?
I'm just understanding. So if somebody earns $3,000 a month and they get injured on the job and they get, $2,000 workers' comp benefit plus $1,152, that puts them over that. I'm just looking at your first example here. That would put them $152 over what they were earning before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, that's correct. But let's also keep in mind, use the illustration of the 45-year-old, this example is a general service employee, but it could be applied to a public safety officer with a little bit different formula. Recognize while they may have a $100 greater benefit, they will also be on a disability. They will no longer be employed. They will have health insurance costs. They will have additional expenses. So while they may be receiving $100 more than their actual salary, they're still going to be struggling in the prime of their career to try to, do what they need to do to keep food on the table for their families.
Yeah, I understand. Follow-up?
Yes, ma'am.
So if this person was injured off the job, well, they wouldn't be getting a workers' comp benefit,
correct.
First of
correct.
All.
That's correct.
So they would just be getting their Tier 1 benefit in case of column 1 here.
Unless they had a disability policy somewhere.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thatcher, in order to be eligible for a non-duty related disability by statute, you also have to have 10 years of experience in the pension system in order to even be eligible for a non-duty related disability. But you are correct, is that their benefit, they would not receive the workers' comp because it's a non-duty related disability.
And I think one more question.
Yes, ma'am. We got all kinds of time today.
Picture this. Okay, so we're going back to an on-the-job injury. In this instance, $2,000 workers' comp benefit, Tier 1 benefit, so it adds up to $3,152. And you're saying that the what's getting taken away now? I'm trying to get a handle on what's...
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, let's just make it easy. Let's say your final average salary is $3,000.
Okay.
What you're seeing is that because of the offset, there's by law, PERS cannot give, even though if you separate the two systems out, by law, they cannot receive any additional monies beyond that $3,000. So that's what we're doing, is we're eliminating that position. And as you can see, the most glaring one is in the third column under OPSERP, even though they would technically be eligible for a $1,350 disability benefit, they're only going to receive a check for $250 from PERS, because that's all they can receive in order to make sure they stay under the cap that's imposed by the offset.
And they've paid for that pension. They've earned it. It's theirs. They own it. And if they're hurt as a result of work, the workers' comp benefit is just, they're getting that because they can't go back to work anymore. They own that pension. That pension's theirs. You can just take it and set it over here. And if you continue to work after you're eligible for that pension and you're disabled as a result of an injury on the job, that benefit is something completely different. And then you should be able to get, and I believe you own both. It just, we're just setting it over there. It's yours. You own it. No one can deny you that. And then as a result of an injury, you get this benefit over here because you can no longer go to work and provide for yourself and your family as a result of that injury.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And I think that's why you don't see a fiscal on this bill. That's why you don't see, to my knowledge, opposition from employers, and why I think this makes sound policy, because it really does come down to a fairness issue. These monies are already put in. They're already factored in either into the pension or they're already factored into what are already extremely low workers' compensation rates. So really the question is a matter of fairness and whether from a policy standpoint we want to make sure that people that are injured on the job actually have a better or equal benefit than those that have a non-duty related disability.
Paid for it, own it, it's yours, it's over here. This is another benefit as a result of an injury on the job. And now you get that compensation as a result of that injury. This is over here. It's set over there. You own it. It's separate. And you shouldn't be denied something you've already paid for as a result of an injury on the job, which you're getting reimbursed for as a result of the injury, and you can't work anymore because of it.
Mr. Chair, I always enjoy coming to your committee because you always talk in plain, straightforward, and that's exactly what we're attempting.
I'm just a hard-legged laborer. I make no claim to genius.
Understood. Thank you.
Representative Kammer.
Representative Thatcher, are you finished?
I am.
Forgive me. I forgive me.
I think you drew the picture quite well.
Okay.
Thank you,
Representative. I'm good for something.
Maybe I don't read this correctly. I'm having trouble harmonizing Section 2 with the emergency clause in Section 6. Is this retroactive? I don't quite get it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kinnemer, we did not request an emergency clause on the bill. I leave those types of things to the fine gentleman that is the foremost expert on PERS issues, and that's Mr. Hendricks and LC. And I think for purposes of making sure that things get consistent, he has certain reasons to do that. So I cannot answer that question directly, but I do know that attorneys have looked at this, and again, Mr. Hendricks is the go-to guy when it comes to Chapter 238.
Follow-up, Representative?
Is there somebody to speak to this issue?
These two fine people are the only folks that have showed up. Personally, that's good enough for me, and I intend to move the bill if we have worked the bill today, if we have the votes on the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Allow me to say that Mr. Hendricks is could well be the finest lawyer in this building. In my humble opinion, truly great lawyer. I have deep trust for his draftsmanship and legal opinion.
And with all due respect, Mr. Representative Kammer, we've been down this road on emergency clause on countless issues.
I'm just trying to find out if it makes the benefit retroactive or when does it go.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kinnemer, specific to retroactivity, it's the intent in my understanding of the language, and if it's just retroactive, I can answer that, and the answer is no, it's not retroactive.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you,
Representative. Any further questions of these fine gentlemen? Representative Ben.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Mr. Chair. How did we get here, Bob? I mean, what happened here that we, you know, because I understand we're talking about two silos, but we ended up putting the silos together here. How did we do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, fair question and a good question, and I'm going to give you two versions, and the reality of it is that both of them may be a little bit correct. I think one was, I think it was an oversight back in the 95 session when we did some reforms to the pension system. No one has tier two, and there was some changes, including age and some takeaways that were recognized and passed into legislation. And then I think also it's a fair assessment that during that time, I think it was a philosophical discussion and debate regarding that, and there were some contentious issues around this. And I think what has happened is you combine those two things. PERS is a complex system, recognizing that, you know, since the inception of PERS, there's lots of changes, and now we really have three different tiers of systems, and when you're moving large, complex pieces of legislation, things get overlooked. So I think it was an oversight, but I think there also was a philosophical debate that went on regarding, you know, the separation of the silos, I think, is a good way of looking at it. Some people didn't want to separate those silos.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, I was involved both in the 95 reform and obviously the 2003 reform. Have been working on this issue for years, and I quite frankly think it was less of a philosophical issue and more of an oversight. I think they didn't, people didn't actually understand that you would receive a lesser benefit if you were hurt on the job versus being hurt off the job. And so I think we're now finally realizing when we started down this path prior to this session, we were looking at actually changing the disability benefit under PERS, and we realized that that wasn't the problem. The problem was the separation of the two and the combination starting in 95 and 2003 actually lowered the benefit. And so I, quite frankly, think was an oversight and not understanding how that would play out in the system.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the conversation. I think this is a good bill, and appreciate Bob's statement about it not being retroactive. I just wanted to point out to the committee, and so the record's clear, that the we have a letter from the Public Employee Retirement System stating also that this legislation is not retroactive. So I just want to make sure that the committee's aware of that.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions for these guys?
It's in your packet.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2704 today? All right, seeing no one, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2704. Open work session, House Bill 2704. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2704 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2704 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion?
Mr. Chair, just a clarification. Yeah. Did we get a fiscal impact statement,
Mr. Chair,
or are we just taking PERS letter?
No, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Cameron, no. We did receive analysis from LFO. There is a minimal fiscal impact on the measure, but there is no impact to the PERS fund, and that is included in the letter from
Thank
the PERS.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? Is there any opposition on the motion? All right, seeing none, so moved. Would anyone like to volunteer? Representative Esquivel, would you like to carry this bill?
I'll carry
it. Very good.
Bill.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2704. And we're waiting on paperwork on House Bill 2963. Apparently, the attorney was sick yesterday. I'm not sure if he's back yet or she. I don't even know who it is. So we're going to move on to House Bill. Open up a work session on House Bill 3184. And members, we just got the fiscal impact. There's no impact on this, so we're ready to move with this. I believe all the parties have come together on this and in an agreement. Representative Thatcher, is that correct?
Yes.
And I think it's a good bill and has merit, and I would entertain a motion.
Is there?
There is an amendment, correct?
Yes, there's a dash 3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
I would entertain a motion.
Dash 3 or dash 2?
I move dash 3 amendment to
dash 3.
House Bill 3184.
Representative Thatcher moves the dash 3 amendment into House Bill 3184. Is there any questions, discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Thatcher, would you like to
Well, I would like to move House Bill 3184 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Yes.
Representative Thatcher moves House Bill 3184 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Thatcher, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you very much. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3184, and members, we don't, what's going on here?
Mr. Chair, I think if we, if you want to hold, can we be at ease for one moment?
We will stand at ease.
Yeah.
Don't go too far. If you need to take care of some business, go ahead, but come right back. here, and I'm going to open a work session, House Bill 2963.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure why we need to have a work session, but because we're waiting for the fiscal on this. The fiscal is not ready. The analyst was out sick, so.
I'm going to close the work session, House Bill 2963.
We can carry it over to Friday.
We'll carry it over Friday. And is there anything for review of the order?
Mr. Chair, I do need to point out something. Representative Holvey did have a question about the fiscals for the two bills we moved to rules today. For any bill that goes to another policy committee, the paperwork is not required. But if it does go to Ways and Means or to Revenue, yes, we would have to have the fiscal and revenue on that.
We don't.
For the record, there were no shenanigans today.
Hallelujah. Nor are there ever in this committee. Any other?
At least
any,
for the
anything else to do to the order that's relevant to the subject matter at hand? Seeing none, we're adjourned.